Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. Another week of Dodger baseball in the books. Overall, a pretty good week.
Yeah, it was okay. The Dodgers are slumping because they lost one in a row, and they lost one game in each of the two series, so couldn't quite finish off the sweep in both cases. So they're dangerously close to falling to a simply winning 2/3 of their game pace. So
unacceptable. It's rough. Even if the Padres, who did also lost today, keep going at it, it is an unacceptable pace because it won't be.
Well,
enough.
Yeah. Well, we saw last year, like all that sort of entails, you know, everything. Like, yeah.
Well, we're going to catch up from that. We're going to have five questions from Craig. We're not having a Dodgers rewind. Do you want to explain why now or later?
Let's go later because we're going to be sponsored by Now and Later. That's a secret I didn't tell anyone before.
Oh, that's exciting. but I'll let you handle that and explain that. And it's also, it keeps the audience engaged. They're going to listen no matter what now. They want to know. Where's Dodgers Rewind going? You'll find out sometime after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Not a lot of huge sort of roster news or big, you know, trends really. Like you said, kind of Dodgers winning series is kind of at expectation. I think the big news is not yet happened. It's coming up, which is the final expected roster crunch. The last change amendment from to handle the fact that the season got started so late and is so compacted.
Right. I guess you could call this a Dodger fast forward. No. Okay.
No.
That's what we're doing. We're not doing Dodgers rewind anymore. We're doing Dodgers fast forward. And then Dodgers pause. So we're getting right now we're Dodgers recording. Anyway, we're recording on Wednesday. There's a rule that was supposed to be in place for 2020, where teams can't carry more than 13 pitchers at a time, on the 26-man roster, but that was sort of ignored during under COVID protocols the last two seasons. And then this year, because of the lockout and the shortened spring, they relaxed it in the first few weeks of the season. And then it was going to go into effect on May 2nd. And then they came to an agreement and said, no, you can carry 14 pitchers for the next 4 weeks. And then after that, there were 13. That's coming next Monday. Now, like I said, we're recording on Wednesday. Very well, by the end of this week, the league and the Players Association could agree again to extend that somehow. It seems like there's, like, I think someone else, I don't remember who wrote it. Maybe it was someone at The Athletic. I saw a tweet or two today about, I think Dave Roberts has mentioned this too, but basically, like, you know, teams are angling, like, oh man, it's going to be tough when we have to go down to 13 pitchers, which, like, if you think about it, is just like a gross thing to say. Because 13 pitchers is a lot, and to, like, you know, maybe don't have every single pitcher throw it 170% every single time. Like, maybe like adapt that way. I don't know, but that's sort of one of the reasons for doing that. So hopefully those complaints fall on deaf ears and they go to 13 pitchers and or something. But because it, you know, it's a lot. But anyway. That could be coming. So right now, teams can carry 14 pitchers. They have to go down to 13 Monday. So they have, four games left before that. And then after that, the Dodgers still have – they don't have an off day next week. They play 7 games in 7 days at home. That's the end of that 31 games in 30 days stretch. So they play the Diamondbacks this weekend. They are going with Mitch White in the opener. He's been like the last time through he was literally like the fill-in, but he only went 3 innings because he wasn't quite built up. I would imagine he's not going to go much more than that on Thursday. And then they're going with Tony Gonsolin Friday. And then Saturday right now is listed as TBA. it's almost certainly going to be Ryan Pepiot or something like that, because he was optioned out, called back up briefly for the doubleheader, which doesn't count against the option. The earliest he can come back is Friday, because he has to be down 15 days. But he's probably going to be Saturday because he pitched on Sunday. It leaves everyone on 5 days rest that this whole time through the rotation. So they're still sort of working out where they want to give like extra days. But then I was looking at this. I'll get to the sort of overarching thing. But the reason why they're doing this, like they really only have four starters right now in Buehler, Urias, Tony Gonsolin, and Tyler Anderson. And then they're still kind of waiting on Andrew Heaney and Clayton Kershaw. Both of them are still like a few weeks away, but like weeks, I think for Kershaw, I think it means more just because I've been saying Heaney for years, but it's Heaney, Andrew Heaney. But so Heaney has shoulder discomfort. He pitched he's going to pitch three simulated innings on Thursday. Juan Toribio mentioned that on MLB.com. That's in Arizona. The Dodgers are going to be there. He threw another bullpen session on Monday. That was his third bullpen session. So I think after the simulated innings, next step is either facing hitters again or starting a rehab assignment. Last week when the Dodgers were at home, he said it would still be weeks for him because he hasn't pitched since April 17th. So he still needs to like build up and do, I would imagine, like 2-3 rehab starts. So I was kind of building this out, you know, just looking at the schedule. Let's say he starts a rehab assignment next week, right? Like Wednesday. You give him two more starts in the minors after that. So like June 7th and June 12th. I think one of them worked out to be a Monday and there's no games on Monday. So it's weird. But that means he wouldn't be back in the majors till like June 17th, 18th, something like that. So that's kind of where they're looking. And he's the earliest one. Like Clayton Kershaw is still in a holding pattern. Kershaw did not go on the first two legs of the road trip to Philadelphia and Washington. He went home and he's joining the team again in Arizona. Roberts said in Philadelphia the other day that it would be a couple weeks before Kershaw even throws a bullpen session. And keep in mind, so where Heaney's at now, he's already thrown three bullpen sessions, and he's still, I would say, 3 weeks away from reaching the majors, like, at best. So tack that on to Kershaw, to like who hasn't, like, started that process yet. Gives you an idea where he's going to be a little while. So that's why where the Dodgers are sort of, you know, sort of figuring out what to do the next, like, month or so. So if Pepiot comes back this weekend, That gives them White and Pepiot as sort of the fill-in type guys this weekend. And then you have a full week next week at home. So one of White or Pepiot, probably White, slash bullpen game. Or depending, they could just option both of them and have an extra reliever up. And they might do some maneuvering, who knows. But then they also have another six-game stretch on the road in the second week of June in Chicago and San Francisco where they would need a fifth starter. So but they also have three off days in an 8-day span. So they can kind of get by through about June 20th until they need a fifth starter again. So like they would basically need a fifth starter four times in the next about 4 weeks. So that's not too bad. And it's not really stretching thin necessarily. So that's kind of where they're looking at. That's probably a decent timetable for when Heaney's going to be back anyway. So that's kind of where they're at. Who knows? But we'll see how it goes. But that's just one of those things that has to be sort of factored in because beginning Monday, at least in theory, unless they change it, they're going to lose a reliever. So we've already seen, I think this week, Bruisdar Gratterall's gone multiple innings a couple times. Yency Almonte went multiple innings today. I think they're going to try to do that because I think they fall into the trap sometimes where they'll use guys, but then for only one inning. And then, you know, sometimes some guys they don't like to use back to back. And, you know, if you're only pitching those guys for one inning, you're kind of wasting them sometimes. But I guess it just depends on the game situation. But it's just going to be weird. But the other sort of weird thing about the last week since we last recorded, So one of those relievers who isn't going to be available is Blake Treinen. We knew that already. He's out till like after the All-Star break. There's no real timetable for his return. But after the game on Sunday in Philadelphia, the Dodgers are like, hey, we signed Blake Treinen to a contract for 2023. You're like, what? Like, this is like a... I expected that. That's an off-season tweet. What are you doing? Like, Treinen had a club option already for next year for $8 million with a $1.5 million buyout. They basically just guaranteed the $8 million. I haven't seen full details on this, but apparently the contract has an option or a conditional option for 2024. This is how Jack Harris at the LA Times reported it. In his story, I'll link to this in the show notes. Quote, one person with knowledge of the situation said Treinen's potential compensation for 2024 would be based on time missed for specific injuries. There's a scenario where the 33-year-old right-hander could be a free agent after next season as well. After 2023. So I think it's probably one of these things where, like, immediately red flags went up because Treinen said he's not... He didn't take these, like, the second MRI. He's just going to do, like, rest and before he even starts throwing. He's not even throwing yet. So it seemed like this was like, okay, we'll guarantee next year, but let's make sure you're ready for next year. So maybe, like, the next shoe to drop is going to be, like, Blake trying to need surgery and he's out for the year or something like that. But I don't know necessarily that's going to be the case because he was already expected to be out for a long time anyway. So... I think, without knowing the details of the contract, it's hard to say either way, but it seems like there's a way in the way it's worded, at least, that I haven't seen full details again. I don't know. But it seems like both sides can get something out of this. So maybe if Treinen's healthy enough to pitch this year and into next year, maybe if he reaches a certain thing, that maybe he can be a free agent based on that. And maybe the conditional option part is... to protect the Dodgers if he doesn't pitch. So, like, it's not a... I don't think it's a given that doesn't, like, mean he's automatically going to miss the rest of this year. I mean, it might be unlikely just given the nature of the injury, but I don't know if the contract necessarily changed that one way or the other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed... But the timing certainly was, like, really weird. It just the way it dropped, too. It was right after the I don't know if you did you watch Sunday's game in Philadelphia?
Yes. Right,
I guess you weren't in Philadelphia.
But I definitely was not in Philadelphia. I can tell you that. That much.
Where they were basically swept the Phillies and then ground ball to Max Muncy, who has struggled mightily at the plate. And he just boffed it for two runs and they lost. And
brutal way to lose.
And then they're like, oh, by the way, we signed Blake Treinen. like it was a palate cleanser or something, like, on the timeline. But no, it's just kind of funny. But yeah, I guess other pitching stuff. I think we talked about this before. At least Tommy Canley had already went on the injured list last week. But I think he sort of went into it a little more. I think an MRI with him showed a bone bruise. And I believe he is in that nebula zone of he's going to miss weeks, so he's going to be out a while, too. They haven't put him on the 60-day IL yet, so, you know, but if it's one of those things, if they end up needing a 40-man move, you could sort of see that. However, another sort of down-the-road, they have a lot of down-the-road guys. I actually forgot because someone asked me the other day about, what's Dellin Betances doing? They're like, oh, yeah, the Dodgers signed him to a minor league deal. I completely forgot. And so they have all these guys, like, you know, Jimmy Nelson's probably super late. But, like, Danny Duffy could be, like, midseason. Obviously, Dustin May, more of a rotation guy, like, in the second half. You know, they have all these sort of, like, maybe this guy will be healthy then. Maybe they won't, you know. So, and I think just Canley's on that pile. But adding another person to that pile is an old friend, a current friend now, Pedro Baez, back on a minor league deal. He signed a 2-year deal with the Astros before last season, had a hurt shoulder basically the whole time. He only pitched in 7 games total. The Astros released him in April. I was looking at this. The Dodgers don't really have to worry until July 12th. That's when they first play the Cardinals and Paul Goldschmidt, against whom he is 1-for-20, against Baez is 1-for-24 with 9 strikeouts, 3 walks and a double. So I'm convinced they got Baez to retire Paul Goldschmidt, restore his confidence, and he's clearly going to be back. So that's it's weird, like, you know, all this we pitching has, I would arguing even with all this, like, this whole thing has been talking about, like, injuries and filling in and stuff, but pitching has still been, like, one of the great strengths this year. I mean, the Dodgers are just, like, really good just generally. However, in a weird, like, for a long, I think for a good portion of the season, the pitching was sort of carrying the team. Even the offense was still doing well, but not, like, exceptionally well. But I think the offense has, like, really picked it up in the last month. And one of the reasons for that is Mookie Betts. He has scored 25 runs so far through 23 games in May. There's still six games remaining this month. He's already tied for the 14th most runs scored in a single month by an LA Dodger. Five of those above him have come in the 2000s, including the LA Dodger record holder. How many of the five can you name, Jacob?
I'm going to go with 1.5, but we'll find out after this. How many of the five Dodgers to have scored more runs than Mookie Betts so far this month, who came in the 2000s, can I name? And when you say 2000s, you mean 2000 and on, not just the aughts, correct?
Correct. Yeah. 2000 to present.
So I gave you my number. About 1.5 would be my guess. Yep. So that's my answer. You asked how many. I figured it out.
Now you have to prove your answer. Okay. We're playing horse, and then you made the shot, I missed. Now you have to make it again to knock me out.
A noted horse. I'm an expert horse player, so this makes sense.
We're big on horseplay on this podcast.
So this combination of just hitters who got on a lot and kind of near the top of the lineup, and hitters who I know had really hot months. Thinking of the latter, Justin Turner.
He did not score 25 runs in a month.
That's one strike. How about Rafael Furcal?
He is the lowest one of the five in the 2000s. That's ahead of Betts. 26 runs in April/March 2008.
What about Corey Seager?
Seager is not on here. He did not score 25.
All right.
I'll give you a hint. I would advise you to think of not just hot months, but big seasons, and you'll find a path.
Cody Bellinger.
Cody Bellinger is number one. He has the LA Dodger record with 32 runs. Now, I got to look back at this. That was in March/April 2019. I think they started on the 28th that year, which made for like a super long month. But still, 32 runs is a lot. He hit 14 home runs in that time, and he obviously won the MVP that year, and he's done nothing but the same thing since then. But so he's number one, 32. Adrian Beltre is number two in the 2000s, 28 runs in August 2004.
Matt Kemp,
number three. In 2011, in September/October, scored 28 runs in 26 games. You're only missing one more.
Yeah, but I've named the big years.
Have you?
Uh-oh.
You are missing a big year.
Oh, no. Brain.
You're missing a big year and a big month that was close to an anniversary that was just celebrated recently.
Oh, and see, now you're messing with me. No, I'm tapping out. Your hints have confused me.
A couple days ago was the 20th anniversary of Sean Green's four homer, six hit game, and but that was in May 2002. In June 2002, Sean Green scored 27 runs. He only scored 25 in May 2000. He was slumping. So, yeah. What a run. Now this isn't more than Mookie Betts, but my my personal... Oh, no, it is more than Mookie Betts. I was looking at the wrong column. But it was before 2000, but Pedro Guerrero, June 1985, when he hit 15 home runs, he scored 27 runs that month. So, my guy.
Fun little question. Yeah. And I got over my... Granted, I needed your hand. I'm trying to think. Definitely should have thought of Matt Kemp way sooner than I did. I think Beltre might have been my next guess, but who's to say? Thank you for the hint. Makes me feel better. Now, this is normally when I would say, hey, it's Dodgers Rewind time, and I'd kind of sit back and listen along with our listeners, because I sometimes skim through the notes, but I usually just like to listen to you tell the story, but I don't get to do that today. Why not?
So, yeah, and just to be clear, we are not sponsored by Now and Later yet, so what we're going to start doing next week, the first episode will be out Monday. We're going to have a sort of Monday through Friday True Blue LA like morning podcast. And it's going to be mostly like quick hitter stuff, pretty short ones, but like sort of a catch-all. Some of them will be sort of immediate type reactions. Some will be interview/audio from like game coverage, and then we're also breaking off our Dodgers Rewind. Not sure which day of the week that's going to be just yet, but one of the 5 days will be end up being a Dodgers Rewind in the morning. But so in addition to this weekly podcast, we're going to have we're calling it Leading Off with True Blue LA every Monday through Friday, starting next week. So Whoa. More details as that comes out. But look for that Monday morning as well. Same feed. You don't have to do anything separately. It'll just show up and you'll be able to listen to it.
Do I have to show up?
You do. What? Yeah, we're recording live. We're going to do 4 a.m. Pacific, so 6 a.m. for you. It'll be totally fine. I think it's basically drive time morning radio. We're going to... Yeah, I'm building a soundboard as we speak.
It's going to be live. Yeah, okay. Fine.
Yep.
Well... What is not moving to its own show, at least not yet, is my favorite segment. It's time for...
Questions from Craig.
Feels weird to be in Questions for Craig this early.
Well, and then the weird thing is, just for us, it won't necessarily be for the listener, but we're going to end on a food question and then record something after that, whereas usually that's our ending point. So we're going to be very hungry in a different record. So there's going to be a weird energy next week. Just so look for that. It'll be fun. See if you can spot the pangs as I'm talking about a certain Dodger.
All right. Since 2000, the Dodgers have had four home run games. Four had one four home run game by a player, and 14 other games where a Dodger hit three home runs. This week's trivia questions are about those and other multi home run games by the Dodgers. You ready?
Sure.
Aside from Sean Green, whose four home run 6-for-6 game was 20 years ago this week. Hey, reminded me of that. That's name the two other Dodgers who have hit have twice hit at least three home runs in a game.
Okay, so I was thinking about this earlier, and I think I talked myself in circles because I already forgot what I was thinking about earlier. So I think what brought this on, or I can't speak for Craig, I didn't ask him, but last night in the Giants game, Jock Peterson, old friend, hit three home runs. He also, it earned him a start against a lefty today, and he homered against the lefty. He's just in a zone right now. Classic streakiest player ever, Jock Peterson. Mookie Betts on Tuesday homered in his first, two of his first three at bats, and he was coming up, and he is tied all time for most three home run games with six. I know one of them came with the Dodgers, and I think two of them came with the Dodgers, so he's going to be one of my guesses. But I'm not like
he only has the one. I'll let you know
in 2020. Okay. Against the Padres. That came in the one of the more infamous Zooms that year, where it was Angry Dave, a very rare Angry Dave Roberts, because they were kind of slumping a little bit. But yeah, and relative to 2020 slumping, it wasn't they weren't playing that badly. But anyway, okay, so the other one I was for sure going to guess was Corey Seager.
Yep.
Okay. And then this is since 2000. Okay, so... Now, this is where I'm running into trouble. What about... Was it Andre Ethier?
It is not.
Man, I don't... This is troubling. Okay. Let's just think about this. I can't think of else. Who else did it? So, is it... Well, I guess this only... This only counts three home run games, right? Like the Sean Green's four home run game wouldn't count.
Correct.
Okay, yeah. So he would have to have two other three home run games to be on this list, and I don't think he did that. So, I guess I'll just say Cody Bellinger just because I can't think of who else. Oh, no, wait, no, yeah, Cody Bellinger.
It is Adrian Gonzalez.
I almost went with him, but I couldn't think of the second one. Oh, now I got it. It was in Cincinnati. Yep. Damn it.
Green's epic performance was one of four times since 2000 where a Dodger player hit three or more home runs as a visitor. Can Eric name the other three players? And for bonus points, can he name the opponent?
So one was Adrian Gonzalez against the Reds. I want to say that was Rob Segedin's like first career home run, or maybe his second career home run, or something in that game too. I was trying to remember the timing of that. Pretty sure that was 16. Three home runs on the road. Now, does this count the postseason?
It does not.
Okay, so Kike Hernandez in Game 5 of the 2017 NLCS to win the pennant. That doesn't count, but I just want to note that I remember that. Three home runs on the road. Why can't I remember? So I remember one of Corey Seager's games was certainly at home. I don't remember where the other one was. I'm just going to say Corey Seager.
Incorrect.
All right. I can't picture any of these. Three home runs. Oh, you know what? Mike Piazza at Coors?
Nope.
What about Mike Piazza? He was traded in 1998, you idiot. I'm talking to myself here, not Jacob. Or Craig. Just to be clear. You stupid dummy. since 2000, where did Ethier was, I'm almost certain it was against the Braves at home. Manny Ramirez against the Diamondbacks?
Nope. I'm gonna give you one more guess.
Oh god. I'm just gonna say Matt Kemp at Coors. No, Kevin Elster, Giants.
That is one of them,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I forgot that was in 2000, right? Like
it was, yeah, but, in yeah. 2000, yep.
So Matt Kemp and Coors is my other guess. I don't know.
Yasiel Puig in St. Louis.
St. Louis. He had like five home runs in two games. Yeah, now I remember.
Eight Dodgers have had at least 10 multi-home run games, two or more, since 2000. Can Eric recall these sluggers in blue? Hint,
God.
Four are still active, two are, yep, Dodgers.
Ten multi-home run games. I seem to remember Cody Bellinger was bunching up quite a bit, pretty much from the jump. So I'm going to say Cody Bellinger.
Has 14.
Just for longevity, I'm going to also say Justin Turner.
Has 11.
And because of the streakiness, let's go also with Yasiel Puig?
Yasiel Puig only had 7.
Jock Peterson?
Had 15.
Okay, so... well, just volume. Matt Kemp?
Matt Kemp only had 8.
Oh, my God. Okay, again, since it's been a little while, I don't even know, because it's only, he's only like at 100 or not even 100. Nope, I'm not going to say him just yet. Max Muncy.
Muncy only has 8.
Yeah. Okay. He's too short. I mean, the time is too short. I mean, what about, Corey Seager?
Corey Seager has 10.
Yeah. What do I need, 4 or 3?
You need 4 or 5? Hold on.
No. Okay, yeah. I was about to
hit you. 4. You need 4.
Okay. Yasmani Grandal?
9.
Come on. All right. I'm just...
giving you only one more strike.
Yeah, yeah. Chris Taylor. I don't think that's right, but...
It is not right. You missed the leader with 18, Sean Green. God. Now, Andre Ethier with 12. Adrian Beltre with 11. And Gary Sheffield with 10.
Damn it. He packed a punch in a short time. Yep, I messed that up.
For the last question, we're going to include the entire wild card era. Though for the record, this is also entire LA Dodger franchise history too. There have been 8 times where a Dodger had 6 or more multi-home run games in a season. Who are these players? You have already named a lot of these players.
Right, yeah. Cody Bellinger.
Yep.
Sean Green.
Sean Green did it twice, 2001 and 2012. Or 2002.
Yeah. When a famous comeback year. I lost my train of thought. Adrian Beltre.
Adrian Beltre's, would you believe, 2004?
I would. And let's go back to the well. Let's go back to the well with Gary Sheffield.
2000.
Okay. What do I need?
You need 1, 2, 3.
Okay. So 6 or more. So Muncy only had 8. I'm this makes me angry. I don't think I said Matt Kemp.
Nope.
Really? What about Ethier's 130 home run year?
2009.
Yeah. I mean, is that, did he do it?
Yes, he did in 2009.
Yeah. Okay, I was like, it was just to his 30 home run year, but he never hit 2 home runs in a game.
Wild card era, not just 2000s.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
That may be a hint to one of the years you're missing.
Yeah. Wait, because I didn't say any. Okay, so Mike Piazza.
Mike Piazza's 95.
Yeah. So I'm only missing 2 now. Okay.
I think you're just missing 1.
Oh, is it Eric Karros?
It is not. You want the year?
Yeah, the coward's way out.
2019.
Oh, wait, okay, I already said Bellinger. 19. Oh, Jock.
Yep.
All right.
Hold on. Jesus. I'm a little sad we couldn't work the other than Mookie's game, the one I was most craving the 4th home run was Hyesop Choi's. I went to the game before that.
Yeah.
Where he had a monster home run to right field pavilion.
He was on a run that week.
It was, that was that series against the Twins in particular. So,
and it all went downhill from there. Not just him.
Not in my heart. Back to one of my favorite topics, sacrifice hits. As of games played through Tuesday, May 24th, 3 Major League Baseball teams do not have a sacrifice hit. The Dodgers, Braves, and Giants. for the contest. Will the Dodgers be the last team to record a sacrifice hit? For the tiebreaker, name the Dodger who will get that sacrifice hit. An extra tiebreaker, will that happen in extra innings?
Okay. I don't think the Dodgers are going to be the last team. So I'll just say that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think one way or the other?
You know, I'll say they're going to be the last team.
Okay, so Jacob, yes. Eric, no. But then if they, let's just say who will be their first sacrificed hit. I'm going to go with Hanser Alberto.
Ooh, that's a good guess.
Yeah.
I will go with Chris Taylor.
That's someone who I was also thinking of, and because I said Alberto, I will say it will happen in extra innings.
Okay. And you know, just for fun, I'll say it won't.
Nice. So we're this is crossfire essentially.
Take you to the
only we're not destroying society. Anyway, yeah.
This season we've had multiple combinations on Dodgers broadcasts, both on TV and the radio. I've enjoyed the various pairings and think that they have shown how adaptable Joe Davis can be on the air. Don Charles Willis' use of JD for Davis is fun, and while Willis is probably the biggest Dodger partisan, he is fun. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it has been a good little run here. Dontrell has called like the last couple road trips, I think. And like, yeah, Craig's right on in that just, it really does show how like good Joe Davis is, like working with so many people. Like, so he's this just on Dodger games this year, he's called games with Oral Hershiser. Actually, and one of the doubleheader games at home was also Nomar. He's called with Eric Karros on the road, Jessica Mendoza on the road, and Dontrell Willis on the road. So, and like they all have worked like very, like almost seamlessly, especially for, and Mendoza, obviously she's been like on national broadcast. She does softball. She's been on the ESPN broadcast for years. So it's not like she's inexperienced. Dontrell, he's done studio work, but I believe when he, the last couple road trips ago was like his first game. He's certainly, I think, the most raw of everyone, but he's like infectious from the jump, like just bringing his energy. And I think that is overwhelming in a way that makes me like, enjoy the broadcast more, even like willing, like Craig said, he is definitely the most partisan, like of all of them. And cause like, I think Oral gets this way too. Because he's done national broadcasts before Oral, like a long time ago at ESPN. He was excellent with Dan Shulman on the radio. It's not like he doesn't know his stuff, but he's definitely, it's not like college football radio guy level of homerism, right? It's not that, but there's a clearly like a rooting interest, like, oh, come on, we needed that call, that kind of a thing. And I think Dontrell lets that slip a little more. It's still, I am enjoying him on the broadcast, and it doesn't seem like a shtick to me. And that's the thing that like helps. He's genuine. And it seems like he's that way at all times. and like, so he's not putting on an act, and also he's mixing in like, oh, by the way, he'll be able to explain. He's talked about like Kershaw, how good he is at tunneling, different aspects of like wind up and delivery for a couple pitchers and just explaining pitches, and he just works it in seamlessly, and Davis is really good at getting that out of guys. But yeah, I just think generally it's been good. And then I guess the other thing that he didn't mention here, but this was sort of new because we just found out about it yesterday, so Darren Sutton has joined the Dodgers broadcast team, and he called his first game today. He filled in for Joe Davis, who is I think off through the weekend. Now, the Fox schedule starts this week, so there's going to be a lot of Saturdays, and usually that means an accompanying like Friday and or Sunday off that Joe Davis won't be doing Dodger games unless he's doing the Dodger game for Fox. This week he's in New York, but I think he's just he took a couple of extra days off like before that trip, because I think in a normal situation it's probably Friday, Saturday, Sunday out, and he took today, I think, and then probably through the weekend, but I guess maybe Sunday, who knows. But yeah, so Darren Sutton was doing play-by-play. I don't know what that means for like Tim Neverett, who was doing radio play-by-play, who is, you know, and obviously mixes it in with Charlie Steiner. But they have like a lot of options now, and Orel's basically doing only home games. He said he was cutting back on his schedule, and so that's why they have the other three, Karros, Mendoza, and Willis on the road. So not sure exactly how that's going to work out going forward, but I mean they've all been really good, are like, you know, a very listenable broadcast, and I maybe it'll take some more time with Dontre Willis before you sort of figure out exactly what you're getting. But I've liked him. I know there's been I've just seen in the comments and stuff like criticism, and maybe it's a little too much, but like I don't know. Like I've sort of enjoyed it. What about you?
Have you found yourself calling curveballs and breaking pitches whooper doopers?
So there's that. I do like the JD when he calls Joe Davis JD. That's funny to me. But like, you know, you could see where like
no,
I could see where it can kind of get annoying.
I think I get annoyed by homerism in broadcasts more than the average, and that has definitely that's graded. Yeah. But I've loved everything else for all the reasons you said, including. The fact that I'm going to start calling all those pitches whooper doopers,
and ones. Then there's the other one.
Go ahead.
Oh no, yeah, you go. You can say it.
Combining everything you said, that like it happened in a quite a good pitching matchup today, Urias versus Juan Soto. That infectious excitement about the game on something that's not necessarily a big home run or something like that. And it wasn't even a strikeout pitch. It was I think a fastball that he changed his delivery, and therefore it almost got Soto, but he was able to just foul it off.
They did a great job of like that entire at bat, because it was eight pitches, and I want to say by pitch two, you could tell from how they were announcing it that this was like a big deal, you know, like, and like it properly like framed this like really awesome showdown. Cause it was like a nice back and forth thing.
And for someone who, you know, and I'll put myself in this, who is a big baseball fan, but you know, never outside of one season of T-ball where we were the champions, I'll have, you know,
obviously
I have no experience in baseball. So I really, really do appreciate when you get that expert analysis, cause I learned something about the game frequently when it's able to be done skillfully. And the fact that he was able to do that while building the tension for the audience was really, really cool. And I'm willing to overlook a little bit of homerism if I get that out of the broadcast.
Yeah, I'm the same way. It's like, you just think about it, like how many times do we have we and others said like on certain national broadcasts, and I'm not necessarily picking, because it's not just like John Smoltz. I know his name comes up because he's in the number one spot as analyst, but like how many times do you hear like complaints about the national broadcast, like that the national broadcasts spend a lot of time talking about what's wrong with baseball.
And it's what's really interesting about that. Yeah. And you know, you could only theorize, but specifically Smoltz was on the international broadcast in the World Series in 2016 when the Fox feed went down. So he like they filled in for a little bit, if I'm remembering this correctly, or maybe. But I remember that very first year, Smoltz was really, really good because he was getting to that nitty gritty. And then it goes to national, and it's this kind of grading. Why aren't they, you know, get off my lawn broadcast? Similarly, we commented on this before. Jessica Mendoza seems to be is allowed to shine more on the broadcast that she did has done so far with the Dodgers compared to her outings on ESPN, which also had this sort of evolution effect where the more as she did more and more national broadcasts, it became more in that company line, so to speak, of ESPN. So how much of that is actually directors pushing, like, this is what we want you to do and keep doing that is curious to say the least.
Well, there's also the thing where, like, baseball inherently is like a regional sport. And I know the big money comes from like national TV deals and stuff, even though those are more fewer and far between. But like the local broadcasts are really where you can get into like a comfort zone of like there's both intimate knowledge because they're around, you know, whether, you know, just getting like pregame stories. That's why it's so good that after like either a year or in some cases 2 years that like broadcast teams are traveling again, because it adds, makes for like a better broadcast, and the broadcasters are more knowledgeable. They can pass on like inside stories and stuff. And it on a local level, it really gets those. And like, you're right, Mendoza shined in hers. Karros, I thought, did really well. And it was funny because Karros worked a lot of spring training, and then with Tim Neverett, and then went right in with Joe Davis, and was like, again, it seemed like they've like known each other for years. You know, it was like, it was pretty cool. The other thing I wanted to mention about Dontrell that I forgot about was he has another, he calls swings passes all the time. And I find that delightful for some reason. I don't know why. I think I compared it the other day to like growing up in the 80s, people are in like in the paper and just generally talking about it. They used to, when people struck out, they'd say, so like Nolan Ryan fanned 10. And for some reason that makes me think of how Dontrell Wallace calls swings passes. I think that's pretty cool.
And yeah, just to echo Joe Davis, goat, very, so like, you know, I mean, not goat. We have been Scully, go the recent current active goat. How about that?
Look, I just, based on how I've seen goat used in the last decade or so, people don't understand what the word greatest means, because there's like 17 goats.
I did mean so. Active currently.
I know.
Greatest.
I got you.
Greatest of
our time.
Goka.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
But yeah, just appreciate him more and more. Starting on Memorial Day, Monday, May 30th, the current major league plan is to have 13 pitchers. Have we talked about this? And 13 positional players. Do you think, one, will this plan still happen? Talked about that. And two, if it does, will the Dodgers call up Zach McKinstry, or is this a spot for Kevin Pillar? We can talk about that, I think.
Yeah.
We have not talked about that.
Like, I do hope it happens, and I hope they stick to their guns and don't extend it again. But yeah, so that comes to the question. So who will the Dodgers add as a second bench player? Now, you have to look at it this way. They've been extraordinarily healthy so far this year, to the point where today was the closest they've had to like a getaway day lineup all year, in that all three of the quote unquote bench players, Austin Barnes, Edwin Rios, and Hanser Alberto, started in the same game for the first time all year. The nine sort of regular guys have accounted for about 90% of the starts, and there's been like very few injuries. Like Gavin Lux missed a start because of his back was tight, and then Cody Bellinger was like sick the last 2 days. He was going to get an off day anyway today, and he ended up getting 2 days in a row off. Mookie Betts was supposed to get yesterday off, but because Bellinger was sick, he played and then got two home runs, and he's just been on fire. But then Mookie was off today, although he pinch hit. So like, yeah, they've been like extraordinarily healthy. So they don't really have a lineup that they're guys they pinch hit for a ton. Of the regulars, maybe Gavin Lux occasionally. So I don't know how much they would necessarily use McKinstry, because Trey Turner is arguably it's either him or Freddie Freeman who's like their most durable. They've both started every game so far. And then you have like Chris Taylor can play short. Although they've sort of kept him in the outfield so far because of the elbow thing. I don't know if it's to a point where if they wanted to play infield. So I guess it's what do they need, right? Like, they seem pretty comfortable with Lux in left field or second base. So it's do you need, and I think they're going to do more Muncy at third, Justin Turner at DH, although maybe Edwin Rios sort of makes some starts at DH, and then Turner plays the field. So who knows, but so do they need an extra outfielder, or they do? I know McKinstry plays; he could play anywhere. So maybe they like the flexibility. Maybe there's a situation where Kevin Pillar has an opt out, like June 1st or something. So maybe they want to just keep him around by calling him up. But also he could be useful. He's a right-handed hitting outfielder for, like, if, you know, Bellinger's great on defense. He's been, like, passable on offense, but not, you know, he was doing okay for a while, but he's gone through slumps and he's still striking out a lot. So that's a problem. So maybe you're more likely to rest him against a tough lefty or something, and Kevin Pillar, who's right-handed batter, like, can start. So I can't say for certain, but I think, given the just relatively few options, I would probably say Pillar gets the call over McKinstry, but I'm not like sold either.
So
way
if they go to 13, they're gonna have to put a pitcher down. Let's say it's Mitch White. What if they call up Mike Witch, a exceptional outfielder who could just be a position player pitching every few days? Huh?
So wait a minute. Yeah. Well, so, and that's the other thing. Does Hanser Alberto count against the 13 pitcher limit? That's the real question. So they're in a tough spot.
One highlight of a recent Dodger broadcast was Joe Davis getting a deep dish pizza for Dontrell Willis. Also on backstage Dodgers, Tony Gonsolin and Alex Vesia. Jeez, learned how to make one. I've only had one once on my visit to Chicago, but I've had different versions elsewhere. Have you both had deep dish pizza, and should pizza ever be eaten with a fork and knife?
Here's
the thing.
Yeah.
If you want to be very pedantic and you say deep dish pizza isn't pizza,
right?
Fine, whatever. Yeah. I don't really care. But you know what? Right. It's delicious. Yes, it's weird and different. Great. It's really, really good.
Yeah. Whatever you call it, it's excellent. Like, yeah, I love it. So I've only been to Chicago once, and it was a very short trip. I did not have deep dish pizza when I was there, sadly. But I have had deep dish pizza, just like generally not. There's not a lot of good places that have it. It's harder to find than I would have thought. Like, so it's been a while since I've actually had it. A couple years probably, but I do really enjoy it. And I mean, and yeah, you do have to kind of go fork and knife on that. In most cases, I guess you can, if you slice it the right way, you can get a small enough thing to sort of handle it. But yeah, there's no shame in that, and it's just still delicious. So like, yeah,
so,
enjoy.
I've had it in Chicago, and I can't for the life of me remember if I went to Giordano's or Lou Malnati's. Is that it? That's the other one.
I think it's Malnati's. Yeah,
Malnati's. Yeah, I've not been to Uno's. I know it, but in one of the, I've probably been to both because I have been to Chicago enough that it's probably the case. I don't remember which one. Forgive me. It was really good. That's now, what I remember.
Now I was going to ask. So Pizzeria Uno. The one that's the national chain, is that the one that is Chicago based?
Almost positive it's not.
Okay. So it's just like they just sort of found that name and were like, hey, we're going to be.
Maybe it is.
Okay.
I'm looking.
I've been to that in like the San Diego, maybe a couple other pizzeria, who knows. But yeah, I've had deep dishes at a few other places. But yeah, it's. I love it. Yeah. And I do.
Wikipedia is suggesting me that it is the same thing.
All right. Cool.
I did not know that. Well, there you go.
Well, go find some deep dish. You can, you know what? Get two deep dish pizzas. Eat like half of one while you're listening to this podcast. Well, actually, you've already listened to it, so rewind it, listen to it again. And then save the other half and perhaps the other, the whole entire other pizza for next week and bring it. You know, sort of portion it over 5 days because we're going to have 5 daily podcasts plus our weekly podcast starting next week. We're going to have a lot for you to listen to, and thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll be back sooner than you think.